you do your podcast with your former teammate Bonzi Wells. It's called Let's Get Technical, and we were just going over the 2000 team roster, the one that went 7 with the Lakers, and just how ridiculous it is in terms of a personality standpoint. And just, you could do, I'm surprised there isn't a documentary on that team. Have you guys ever been approached about like a serious doc on that 2000 team? Because yeah, Greg Anthony, Stacey Augmon, Brian Grant, Jermaine O'Neal, Scottie Pippen, Arvydas Sabonis, Detlef Schrempf, Steve Smith, Damon Stoudemire, Bonzi Wells, and yourself. That's a pretty great cast of characters.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we definitely, we had that in the works now, actually, a little documentary is going to come out soon. You know, it just takes time with those things because we want to cross all the T's and dot the I's. But that was a hellacious team, in my opinion, as well. It was a defensive team. And that was our main thing. You know, we felt as though our only foes at that time, or our only great nemesis, I should say, is a better term, were the Lakers. You know, at the time, I felt as though Shaquille O'Neal was the best athlete on earth. And it was just hell trying to get by him.
Yeah, and like again, they've talked about it before in the past, and I'm sure if you guys do a documentary that they'll be involved in it because, yeah, both I know Shaquille O'Neal at least has talked about that those were the crystallizing moments, that series against you guys when he and Kobe took it to another level. It is funny, though, that, yeah, you were on an NBA championship team, one that's super famous and one that we actually talked a lot about in Toronto the last year because – we were doing the parallel of, you know, a team that wins and a group that wins, and can you be the Pistons? That was always the Raptors' goal. But that, yeah, when I think about your career, I still think about you more as a trailblazer. Like, if you affiliated yourself with one team, I'm guessing it would be the Pistons, right? Or would it be the Blazers?
It depends on the era you're talking about. You're talking, you know, the late 90s, of course, I'm going to go with that Blazers team. But if you're talking in the early or mid-2000s, then I got to go with the Detroit guys.
Yeah, we kept doing Blazer stuff because, again, you and Bonzi. But what is the percentage of Trailblazer stories that you guys can actually share on that podcast?
Oh, man. It's a lot of great stories. You know, we just gotta make sure we don't incriminate the wrong people with things, you know? So but we definitely can tell a lot of good stories. And because we were together for so long, day in, day out. It wasn't just basketball. You know, we spent a lot of time with each other and our families. And, you know, I spent time over Bonzi's house. He spent time over my house. We went over Pip's house. Damon, you know, it was all a family atmosphere, and I think that's what made us a close-knit team and just go balls out for each other when it came time to play those Lakers.
Yeah, and, you know, just before you came on, we were also just talking about your dynamic on that team, right, especially in 2000, because you're really starting to come into your own at that point, right? Like, now we're talking about a guy who's really starting to put it all together, but you're on a team with a lot of vets and a lot of, like, some future Hall of Famers, but most specifically Scottie Pippen. And we're coming off this, we're coming off of watching The Last Dance, and we're coming off of this conversation about underrating Pippen and properly rating Pippen and doing all of these things. But what was it like for you personally, knowing that, okay, I'm now the best player on this team, that the offensive driver is going to be me, and yet you're kind of taking and sharing the reins with a future Hall of Famer who has just been on the most famous basketball team arguably to ever exist, and he's at the tail end of his career while still effective, and like you mentioned, it's a defensive team, he still offered that, but in terms of trying to deal with the coming to grips with, hey, this is my team now offensively, and how that happened between you and Pippen?
Well, I never really looked at it as my team per se, because I can't win the games by myself. I always had a team concept from the time when I played high school basketball. So that's the main thing that I always have in mind first. You know, of course, yeah, I can go out there, take every damn shot, try to average 30 or 40, but that's not saying that we're going to win. That's not saying we're going to get into the playoffs. Yeah, I might have a good career, you know, get some personal accolades, but wouldn't win nothing. So I, you know, sacrifice all those shots or trying to be the man. And I saw it more as a team. But when we got Pitt, I felt as though that he was a key cog in the wheel that that will help put this over the top, you know. And yes, you were right. He was on the tail end of a fabulous career, and you know, when he came at first, I got the wrong impression of him. You know, I thought Pitt was going to be the type of dude that was like, hey, I won 6 rings, so y'all ain't nothing and this and that. I thought he was going to be a little bit stuck up, but he wasn't. He was a down-to-earth dude. And to me personally, he helped me. He helped me. He helped us at that time, you know, because we were a good team. But with his leadership at certain points deep in the season, that helped us. Certain games he won for us, being that leader, being that spoken voice in that locker room. And of course, you know, you'd be a fool not to listen to a man who won 6 championships and was a key part of that. Yeah. So when Pitt came on the team, I felt as though, like, look, hey, all I'm going to do is sit back and I'm going to soak up this knowledge that this man is giving.
Yeah, so obviously, yeah, close relationship with him. I mean, it seems like it's pretty far in our rearview mirror now, but I'm sure you watched Last Dance, as everybody did. Scotty wasn't exactly thrilled with the way he was portrayed over that documentary. How did you feel about it?
No, I'm with him. I'm with him. I mean, damn, I helped you get 6 rings as far as the organization goes. So now it's paying my money. You know what I'm saying? It's only right. It's only right. And at the times, back then, you know, guys weren't getting paid a substantial amount of money, like, for say, when I came into the league or even now. So I'm like, yeah, pay that man his money. I don't care what you have to do. Give him a percentage of the team, hook him up with mad endorsement deals, but you got to make him feel his worth. You know, everybody got to feel their worth on the team. You know what I'm saying? So I see it as, Scotty, look, he was second in command. We know Mike was going to be the first one to take all the shots and this and that, but Pitt wasn't no punk. It's like when Mike checked out the game, and if Pitt was still in there by himself, or even checked in for Mike, no, you still had to respect him. You still had to be like, look, hey, be on your P's and Q's. Just because he wasn't Mike, that don't mean he couldn't play.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because, like, the whole Pippen storyline plays out. And, of course, it's true. He was just so unbelievably underpaid as a Bull. But then you go and you look at his career earnings after that. It's like, his Portland contract, I'm pretty sure you're aware, was pretty good. Like, guy made $110 million over his career. Everyone's like, poor Pippen. He's fine. He made his money. He eventually did get his due. But it's so weird watching that doc, right? Because you just look at the era and how different things are now. Like, if there was ever a general manager that tried to go at LeBron James and be like, hey, LeBron, we're not keeping the team together. We're not feeling it. We want to go in a different direction. That would never happen. It's wild to see that now. And so there's all this talk about eras. And to me, you're always one of those guys where, and I've always wanted to ask you this, do you feel like you played in the right era? Because part of me thinks that Rasheed Wallace now, where they're all of a sudden telling you, hey man, you can take, like, you're going to score inside on smaller guys. There's not going to be as much size down low, but then we're also going to let you shoot 8 threes a game. That, yeah, it might have been a little bit different. Obviously, you had an incredible career, but do you look at this era now and say, I would have preferred to play in this one?
No, I actually love the era that I played in because it was tougher to me. It was more defensive. Now the league is more about offense. You know, offense sells tickets. Defense wins championships. It's always been a motto that I live by. And today the NBA, even though we have great players, but look at them, they're great scorers. You know, you have Steph's a good scorer. KD's a good scorer. Kyrie's a good scorer. You know, LeBron's a good scorer. You have all these guys who can put that ball in the hoop. But it's a different era now. Back then, it was all about trying to stop them from putting that ball in the hoop. But now it's like, I think what most guys depend or say that defense is if I'm just, you miss a shot. If you miss a shot, I get the rebound. That's good defense. No, that's not good defense. That was a 50-50 chance that you lucked up because he could have hit it. What if he would have hit it? Then, oh, you can't consider that to be defense. So I like to play defense personally. That's what I always hung my hat on. So I definitely would prefer to play in an older era.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely shows through, yeah, the two teams that you had the most success with. I'll tell you one part of your era that you definitely would have wanted to play it in this one, though. Monetization of things you say. because now we did a segment the other day talking about how now everything gets monetized immediately. Like everybody tries to trademark everything. And I feel like if you were in this era after Ball Don't Lie, you're having like a secondary career that like your secondary income coming off of Ball Don't Lie is rivaling your player career. Like how does it, at least did you ever think about monetizing that? Did you ever try to think about, hey, this is mine. I'm going to try to copyright this. Like I'm going to try to make this my own thing, because yeah, Ball Don't Lie is synonymous now with basketball culture. Like it's just, it's there. It's something, it's not even basketball. It's everywhere. It's like anything that goes, like anything that you say it means justice, Ball Don't Lie, you just say it. Like, that's a thing that is just common vernacular.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, for me, no, I never really thought about, you know, trying to monetize it and coin it, but because that's when people stop saying it. It loses its feel. It loses its meaning. So, you know, just look what Pat Riley did when he coined the whole three-peat term. Uh-huh. You know, guys stopped saying it. Even though we've had some champions since he coined it, three-peat. So I'm like, nah, guys, people know where it came from. Just like both teams play hard, God bless and good night. People know where it came from.
People also know to look to you when, you know, the all-time single-season leader when it comes to technical fouls. We talked about how unbreakable that record is. Do you feel the same way? 41 in an 82-game season. You think anyone ever touches that?
Probably not. Probably not, because it's a whole different league now. It's a whole different league, whole different era. You know, if you look at a majority of the guys who get a lot of technical fouls in the NBA, they're veterans. You know, LeBron gets his couple techs, Westbrook. You know, it's more veterans that gets it now than the younger fellas. The younger fellas don't – they're not trying to buck the system or go against the system or, you know, however you might want to call it.
See, if I was an end of the bench guy, if I was kind of a bum, there's this now, again, I'm just thinking about this from a business standpoint and looking at the UFC and saying, okay, Conor McGregor got famous. Why? Okay, because he's a good fighter, but because he's got a mouth. Is I would be looking at it and saying, all right, maybe I don't get playing time, but I'll be famous and I'll be lined up to have the biggest job on, I'll be the next co-host of First Take if I'm just yelling at officials from the bench and I snap Rashid's record, and that all of a sudden there's like a tech watch and it's just a guy who's like at the end of the bench, into the rotation, who's still there and still getting thrown out of games and taking technicals. I would be here for that. I'm surprised. Like, I think someday someone will do that. That's where we're at.
You never know. They might. Yeah. You never know. I wouldn't doubt it.